Three quarter. Thank you very much. Okay. What we gathered to discuss is the fire of desire. Without desire, you're not going to do anything in life. Everyone has some desire for something. And because of these desires, you not only push ahead in this life, but also you push ahead in coming lives. The ancient Vedic knowledge of India explains that your process of taking one life after another is all powered by your desires. We shouldn't take our desires to be such an innocent thing, like, oh, okay, I feel like doing this, or I feel like doing that. What could be the harm? If you're smart, you'll try to take a deep look at your desires, and that way you can tell where your life is heading. And if you're even smarter, you'll take a look and see, have you really been satisfied by acting according to your desires? Why don't we bounce that last one around, see what you have to say. Have you been really satisfied following your desires? Anyone like? That friend from Austin? You're an underground filmmaker and duty-free shop manager by day, and who knows what else the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Looking back on your years of desire, you certainly recognize there's been desire, right?
Mm. But when you say desire, do you also have, how do you define that? Do you call that sort of a passion? Like, to me, if you're, whereas you can be in bliss if you follow your passion, say if it's a creative passion,
mm-hmm.
So would you class that as a desire as well?
Definitely.
So if you're a writer and you're writing and you reach bliss in your writing, would you class that as a desire?
A desire can be good or bad or appropriate or inappropriate.
Okay.
It's just something you want.
Yeah.
Something you hanker for, even if it's very subtle and very slight.
Sure. And so, you know, there's definitely been a balance between good. There's been good and bad in life, and the outcomes have been different. Yeah.
So you're able to see in your life how desire...
Not always, no.
Yeah.
No.
Sometimes you desire things that you weren't aware that you desired them.
Yeah. And also, sometimes you might think the outcome's going to be positive, and it's not.
Mm.
It sort of could be a flatness at the end.
Mm. I guess being a shop manager, you see people walk in your shop all the time and desire catches them and maybe they buy things they didn't plan to buy.
Yeah, very much.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you're very happy when they do that, right?
Yeah, we're aiding them to drop it.
And helping them to have desires they didn't have when they walked into the store.
That's right.
Mm. Now, can you see that metaphor in terms of your whole life, that just like people walk into your duty free shop on Willow Street and all of a sudden they develop desires for things that they didn't have before walking in the shop, and you see in your life how as you were journeying through your life, you know, things took a sudden turn that you didn't plan for,
mm-hmm.
and some desire sprouted up.
Yes. Mm. Hmm.
Anyone else can see the course of desire in your life, how desire has popped up in your life, planned or unplanned?
Yeah, I find it at university. I think you pick up the desires of, that are around and the people you're with. Because lately I've been studying really hard, and then I find I've got a real desire to succeed.
Ah.
And then makes it more stressful.
Oh. So the people you hang out with, they're really success oriented?
Well, yeah, I think university is really.
No.
Depends on who you hang out with, you know. We see all types of students from University of Victoria here, and some are the, you know, dedicated party animals. A few of them are serious students. So, you know, depends on what your group is like, you know?
Yeah, it's quite hard working, I think.
Oh, so you must hang out with the goody-goodies, huh?
Well, they tend to get their own physics
session. I guess so. Yes, I guess someone who's studying physics and mathematics has some desire to perform some scholarship. But generally when I see it, you know, Victoria University, not so many serious students.
Really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We get them here all the time.
No.
So you see how your life's been shaped by the people around you, that they're serious students, they want to, what, they want to get ahead?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone wants to be successful and be the best at it.
They want to get the highest marks,
mm-hmm.
and they think they'll get the best job afterwards.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. So you've noticed how that kind of...
Yeah, it really gets me. I think I've got that desire somewhere in me. Mm. Pokes its head up every
now and then. Alright, now we'll get back to you, and we'll probably ask you, will that satisfy you? But anyway, that's another question. Anyone else? Can you see how...
I don't think I've accomplished all that yet. I've went with any of my desires the entire way, you know what I mean? Like, I haven't actually completed anything to see whether I'm satisfied or not satisfied. I'm still sort of looking to figure out. Yeah.
You haven't completed anything?
No, nothing at all.
How old are you?
23.
And you've not completed anything?
I'm sure there's sort of being completions, but not that I want. You know what I mean? Like, I have my aspirations I haven't achieved. Everything that I have completed is not what I planned out to be blind.
Well, that's a good plan. That's all right. Yeah, that is it. Everything I've completed is not what I planned to do.
It's like I always land short. Yeah, yeah.
You always what?
Land short, like infant.
Land short, yeah.
The infant style, but only reach the cloud, mm-hmm. and not like that. Don't you consider that to be anything?
Mm. Now, allow me to point out that, yes, you're doing a common analysis of your life. You have some major goals which you feel you haven't reached, and therefore you feel you haven't had a sense of completion in your life. But actually, your days, the day after day affairs of your life, are also powered by desire. So you shouldn't just look at the big milestone events in your life. You should also look at the day to day, and there you'll also see desire at work.
Yes. Again, yeah, somehow it just feels every time I wake up, I have a big plan laid out, and then when I go to sleep, I go, oh, I only did a quarter of things I wanted. Desire, saying, I'm just setting the bar too high, having achievements along the way that are not as significant as open milestones. And I mean, yes, I see achievements, you know, on a day to day basis, but I feel to stop and sort of look at myself and go, oh, that is great what I've just done. It's just a waste of time over. We're like looking forward all the time, going, tomorrow I have to do that, rather than going, today I've done so much. You know?
Okay. I mean, would you say that your desires have been more successfully fulfilled here in New Zealand than in Ukraine?
Desires that I had in Ukraine were like childlike, you know, like toys and things like that. But, you know.
Did you get that in Ukraine? Tangled and clothes?
Yeah. But,
Well, your family was well off for Ukrainian standards.
Not really. It's just, you know, depends. Sometimes you have something to eat, sometimes you have nothing to eat, sometimes you have a lot, sometimes you have nothing. But, in here, so I started setting higher standards for myself, and the standards, I believe, like, that I set are high, but they're achievable.
We'll get back to you and ask you about the happiness that those desires bring you. Right now we're just dealing with desire, and I see that some of you have this concept that desires are something big. They're not just the little things day to day. Anyone else? Our friends in the back there? Anything to say about desires as you look back over your life?
I have lots of desires, I suppose, small desires, family desires. You've had a lot of years behind it, but and I've had a lot of happiness from your desires.
You'll add a very important perspective, because so many of these persons here, they're younger, and they don't really have experience in this lifetime of what their desires can do for them. They're at the beginning, many of them. They haven't had a chance to go far in their life and then see, well, that wasn't the road I really wanted to take. So you had that chance to see that. Now, do you think that you can live without desire?
No.
Can you imagine a desireless state of existence? Yeah, what would it be like?
Being an animal?
Being an animal? You think animals don't have desires?
Well, they do, just they don't phrase it as the word desire.
They don't phrase anything.
For them, it would be just existence, you know, survival, whatever.
Like most human beings,
yeah,
today.
Yeah, but not just that. Just, oh, I didn't live with it. So.
Of course! What happens if you leave some food out and you have a pet and the pet's not trained, or the pet gets overwhelmed and, by its desires, and as soon as you turn your back, the pet goes after the food you left out. How do new animals come into being? They're breeded. That means there was a mother and father animal with desires.
There's a desire that's sort of
Can they appreciate their desire? No, doesn't seem they're that conscious, but still they have desires, instincts. You don't have instincts?
I mean, it's like, say, when I feel hungry, and I go eat something, would that be considered a desire?
Yes!
Would that be considered an instinct?
That is desire, instinct, yes.
Is it an accomplishment?
Well, okay, let me give you another tip. How old are you now?
19.
Now, when you were 10 years old, were you always thinking about girls?
Not always.
And then what happened when you were 12 or 13?
More.
Why is that more?
Instinct.
Your hormones change.
Hormones.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, you're preoccupied. Now, if you want to understand this thing about instinct versus desire, it's good to take knowledge from the ancient Vedic texts of India. They'll explain to you that your whole body is not simply composed of flesh and blood and bone. Your body is actually composed of desire. Now you can really get a deeper look at yourself if you think in that way. that your body is composed of desire. Therefore, there's actually no such thing as an innocent child. How many of you thought you were innocent children? You thought you were an innocent child? Anyone else besides Bridget?
What do you mean by innocent?
Just, you know.
Desire.
A blank slate, just, you know, growing up in the world and whatever society imprints upon you, that's what you're going to be, and No, you haven't done anything wrong.
Have you?
You tell me. Were you did you view yourself as an innocent child?
Did I view myself?
As an innocent child.
Not when I was an innocent child. Not when I was a child, because you still don't view yourself at all.
Really?
I don't know.
All of you, when you were kids, you never viewed yourself? You never, like, did a double take on yourself when you were a little kid? You did, huh?
Yeah.
I did, too.
Yeah.
I remember when I was 8 years old, I would go around asking all the adult couples, and say to them, "Why are you with her? Why are you with her?" And they would kind of look at me, "You'll find out." Now, I remember thinking about myself when I was 5, probably 4. I remember thinking as a little kid, 4 or 5 years old, kind of, what is this place I've landed in? What kind of planet is this? I remember thinking like that. Anyone else? Felt they were an innocent kid? Carlos, you felt you were an innocent kid? Yeah. A friend in the back, when you were younger, you felt you were innocent, kids?
Probably. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you adopt the Vedic perspective, based on the Vedic knowledge, once again, that means the body is composed of desires. Now, that means you can't be an innocent child. It means simply, when you're a child, that it's a matter of time before the desires manifest. That your body is composed of seeds of desire. They're already planted at the time of birth. And as you progress from infancy to an older child, those desire seeds in your body start to sprout and manifest. You'll get quite a different vision of your life if you look at your body as a bag of desires besides a bag of flesh and blood and bone. All of a sudden then, when you look at your body as a bag of desires, you don't look so innocent anymore. You can see you're guilty. Now, as a little kid, you may not be able to be conscious of all this. But why are you a little kid? You're a little kid because of your previous life. The desires of one life lead to the next life. So when you're a little kid, you're simply continuing the sequence of desires from your past life. If you didn't have that sequence of desires, you wouldn't have taken birth as a little kid. This is what the ancient Vedic knowledge teaches. Because you have desire, you take birth. Birth after birth, life after life, the whole system is powered by desire. Just like our friend here who works in the duty-free shop. He sees people come in powered by desire. They walk into the shop, right? And you can just see it on their faces, right? Well, I desire something. I wonder if this store is going to have it for me. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they have something in mind that they're desiring. Mm-hmm. Other times they just want to walk in and want to be hit with something. I wonder if there's going to be something here that's going to arouse my desire. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of them even come up to you and say, what do you think I should get?
Yes, I'll ask your opinion on certain items, yeah.
Right.
What's nice or what's new? That's the nice, what's new.
I can't imagine walking to shop and asking what's new. Do people actually do that?
Yeah.
Well, what do they mean by that?
In fragrances, you know, like they come out every few months.
I don't know anything about that stuff. You mean like ladies come in and ask, you know, what's new?
Well, some guys come in too. Yeah.
For themselves or for giving us gifts?
Both. Yeah, because we sell cream as well.
What's new?
Yeah.
What's the latest fragrance?
Yes.
You did that?
Yeah.
I don't know. You've got to explain to me this mentality, the latest fragrance. I mean,
everyone wants to have the new thing. Everyone wants to have it.
You go buy the latest fragrance and tell all your friends this is the latest.
Well, not actually a fragrance, but I can say people would do that. Sadly.
Did you buy any of the latest fragrances? You paid for it. What did you just say? Honey, just get whatever you want.
Take care. You can get
what you want. So, she had a desire for latest fragrances. And why did you facilitate those desires?
You can't remember.
To satisfy you, I suppose. Yeah.
But why did you want to satisfy her?
To satisfy myself.
Right! Yeah. Now the discussion's getting real. So you facilitated her desire for the latest fragrances, thinking that by doing that, she would fulfill your desires. And then you were thinking, if you fulfilled his desires, then he would fulfill more your desires, right? Right? So this way, things went on and on, right? But then what happened? We will get to that part later. Interesting. It's hard for me to understand someone walking into a shop and thinking, what's new? I mean, you're just like leaving yourself open for, you know, being manipulated, right? And of course, you tell them what's new is the most expensive thing, right? You're paid by commission?
No.
But still, you want your store to have a high volume.
Yeah, there is target.
Yeah, I have something just for you. I can't imagine anyone surrendering to a salesperson, you know, what's new? Have any of you ever done that? Like, walked into a shop and really, took a salesperson's advice on something? Yeah. Can you give me an example?
If I didn't know something. Some salespeople you can trust.
Thank you.
Where do you find them?
You can tell if you can trust them. You can just tell. Sometimes they tell you you need to go to another shop and then you know you can trust them.
Just like someone walks into the shop and they let their desires overwhelm them. In fact, maybe even if they don't have an idea how to satisfy their desires, they want you to help them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So basically what they're doing when they come into the shop is saying, can you help me with my desires? Right?
Yeah.
You ever looked at it like that?
No, possibly haven't used the word desire, but yes.
That's basically what it is.
That is, yes.
Can you help me with my desires? Because any expert salesperson will tell you that people are not actually buying a product, they're buying expectations. Mm. And you know that, right?
Yes.
So you really pop up the expectations, right?
Yes.
Oh, this is really going to smell good. I mean, I've heard so many good reports about this fragrance, but did you know that, you know, such and such famous person was in last week and got this fragrance? You say that? And are you telling the truth?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've been a couple of cases. I am actually, because I might say, you know, this was Princess Diana's favourite or something like that.
Are people really get impressed by that?
Yeah, sometimes they do, yeah. Or you could say how the bottle's designed or, you know, hopefully you say the truth.
How the bottle was designed?
Yeah. It's like how the designer came to designing it.
The model?
Yes, the perfume bottle, yeah.
That's important?
Yeah.
The shape of the perfume bottle?
Yeah. They're often very beautiful, the shape of them.
Some people actually buy perfume for the bottle also? It's interesting. I didn't ever hear of that. Did you know that?
Not really.
You're getting all the secrets now. The secrets of desire at the duty-free shop. Now, why do you tell them these things? Whether it's true or not, why do you tell them these things?
Because I think they want to hear it. They want reassurance.
They want reassurance in fulfilling their desires.
Yes.
And why are you giving them that reassurance in fulfilling their desires?
God paid to do it. No, I do it because usually, you know, I'd like to become quite honest. So I do it because, yeah, you can tell they're a need for something.
But why are you just helping them fulfill their desires? Why? What's your motivation?
That's what we get paid for, really. That's how doing the sales work, isn't it? Really?
But why are you doing that?
Oh, why have I got that job?
Yeah.
Oh, good question.
No, it's an easy question.
Oh, money, I suppose. You got to get paid for it, so it's a desire for money.
Okay, desire.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, it's a
need. So just like
a need.
A desire. Desire. You desire the things that the job can bring. Just like the people who walk in the shop.
Okay.
Just like she desired the perfume, he facilitated the desire to fulfill his desire. She fulfilled his desire, so he would fulfill her desire. So it's all what you're seeing is an exchange of desire.
Okay.
They come in your shop with desires. You serve their desires in a way that allows you to fulfill your desires.
Right? Yeah, that's true.
Now, what would happen if they stopped paying you for your job? Would you go into work?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't enjoy the job that much.
So you're just doing it to get what you need to fulfill your desires.
Yes.
Yeah. See how simple life gets when you just see what's really going on?
You can see it another way, then.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can tell some salespeople just are very interested in serving you. And sometimes when I go shopping, I might need a piece of clothing or something, and so I go and get one, and sometimes people help me pick which one will be best.
Can you give us an example?
Well,
now,
yeah.
Some of us here are men and we're not tuned into the, in the way that, you know,
oh,
the other
okay.
gender approaches shopping.
I'll give you a more...
Well, this example. You're going shopping for clothes, yeah.
Oh, no, well, I needed some trampoline boots to go trampoline.
Can you give us something less, an example less functional?
Okay, I went with my brother, because
mm-hmm.
he wanted to buy me a birthday present.
Mm-hmm.
And we just picked something up, and he got it.
Well, how did...
I just looked at it and thought, that's me.
That's you?
Yes.
Meaning, that's my desire.
No.
Yes!
It can come down to sort of helping your fellow man as well. I was just thinking then when Elizabeth was talking, because sometimes for the salesperson, myself, for me personally, if someone is very confused and, you know, maybe not self-confident or whatever, they just, you know, and they really need it, maybe a little bit of a boost in their life, it mightn't be, you know, it might just be a retail boost, which probably doesn't...
Retail therapy.
Yeah, it doesn't go very high on the scale of the whole picture, but it can be quite rewarding for myself.
To help them purchase,
yes, yes,
to have the retail therapy.
Well, yeah,
like a doctor.
I'm not putting it in, you know, anything, you know, I'm not enlightening it much, but it can be sort of reassuring. So quite often when people are not just there to fulfill a need and get cash in the register, you know, it can be a little bit helping you, your fellow man.
You kind of feel like you're, by helping them fulfill their desires, you're really making the world a better place.
Making them, whether it be instantly happy or whether it be, you know, momentarily happier than they were when they came into the store.
You know. Parting with their money or...
Sometimes it's just like, you know, that you've brightened up that bit of the day for the person.
But they just spend some of their money. And that's what it's for, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not exactly a bad thing to spend money. And it's not a essentially evil thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our friends in the back, you're more experienced than these people here. What do you have to say about this whole desire activity? I think we're starting to be able to see that desire is much more present in our life than what we would immediately recognize. Yes, you're starting to see that?
Not really now. I mean, I sort of live basically on just necessities, but aiming for, you know, like a higher goal. Yeah.
Wow. Just necessities.
Not just, but yeah, really trying to stick to necessities. I mean, there are some things like ornaments or whatever.
Like the t-shirt.
That I was checking it out. I was checking it out.
Yeah, the t-shirt is not like a necessity to have a design on it and stuff. But it kind of does help to fit in with peers in a way.
And why do you want to fit in with peers?
Really just, not to sort of show that I'm against them, I guess.
You want to be accepted?
Accepted. But not for the,
You want to feel accepted. You don't want them to think, oh, he's a foreigner from Ukraine, doesn't know what's happening.
Okay.
honest.
Yeah. So you do desire more than the necessity.
Yeah, just, but I feel it's just a little bit more.
Oh, everybody feels that way. Everybody feels, you know. I don't have unreasonable desire. Now those other people, they're the materialists. They're the greedy ones. But I just have basically what I need. I've been basically living a humble life and, you know, a few pleasures and indulgences here and there, but nothing big. But those other people. Right?
Yeah. Exactly like that.
In this way, you hide from seeing how desire has shaped your life and depowered your life.
Yes. But it's depowered or empowered? You say depowered or empowered?
Powered. Desire has pushed your life. Like you're art studying art, right?
Yeah.
So artists are pushed by desire.
Partially.
Yes.
Do you want that others appreciate your art? At least a few people, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But is it, I guess that's more of a desire than a need.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I don't discriminate between the desire and need, because you could say that, well, it's natural to need popular acclaim. It's natural to need appreciation. So whether you call it a desire or a need, you are desiring it.
But need is sort of a word to use when it's like basic existence. Say food, you can't, same as I desire food, like desiring specific kinds of food, like that you might not need in your life. But just generally, you can't, you just have desire to know the news, so you buy a newspaper.
Right.
But you might need to know that, say, like, some sickness or disease has broken out. So is that a need or is it a desire?
I think we would go far by not discriminating between need and desire.
Okay.
You could desire fresh air. That's a need, but still, it's also a desire. So we're not kind of, you know, trying to make a hierarchical distinction between need and desire. We're just trying to get you all to understand that you are creatures that hanker, that crave, that want. And then we can deal with things from there.
It's just because the reason I couldn't identify the lesser desires as desires also is because I see the bigger sort of higher goals as main, and the rest of it is just it's either helping you get there or it's either stopping you from getting there.
Still, it's not that your life simply consists of milestone mega events. Your life consists of day-to-day desires.
Yeah.
And you can get control of your life if you can get control of these day-to-day desires and not just pay attention to the huge mega event desires. Mm. All right, now I was going to ask our elderly couple in the back. At some time in your life, did you ever think, we're going to get a grip on our desires and we're going to really see what we want and what we really don't need?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I desire to continue. I've just traveled thousands of miles because I have a desire to see my son.
Mm-hmm.
Desire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So everyone now feels guilty about that you have desires, right? Yeah. I made you all feel guilty that you're not innocent. You have desires, whether big or small. Whether you want to have art desires or you have perfume desires. Everyone realizes you've got desires. You have desire to see your son. We're not making any value judgment. We're just pointing out that your life is simply full of desires and your body is a bag of desires. So when tomorrow morning, when you look in the mirror, I want you to think, I'm seeing it now, the bag of desires. And if you face that, this is a good step in progress, because most people like to hide behind the excuses of, oh, this is just necessity I'm dealing with. These are just needs. No, don't fool yourself in that way. Just accept the fact you have desires and therefore you're doing things. You can accept that. You have desires, therefore you are doing things.
Aren't some desires destructive and some constructive?
Well, we're not getting into that right now. We're just trying to get you to see that you have desires, therefore you are doing things.
Hmm.
Now, let's go into the issue of, have your desires made you truly happy?
Yeah, I feel that the destructive desire that I identify destructive for me, make me happy just for a short amount of time.
Short amount of time.
And then if it takes a longer amount of time to recuperate from that, then the constructive desire, I haven't reached it.
So you mean constructive desires are what make you happy for a long time?
Yeah.
Have you had any of that?
The constructive desires?
Yeah, that make you happy for a long time.
I feel as if I'm constantly working towards them, but...
But have you had any of it yet?
Have I reached any?
Yeah, desires to make you happy for a long time.
No, I haven't achieved anything.
Okay. Hold it right. Anyway.
Making you good.
Huh? Have you had any desires that when you tried to fulfill them, they made you feel good for a long time?
Not sincere happiness.
That's in what?
Not sincere happiness.
That's in something.
Sincere. Pure happiness.
So you haven't had that?
Not really.
Okay.
I don't.
Just hold you right there. You don't want to make any judgments, for just gathering the facts. And Elizabeth, have you had any desires that made you happy for a long time?
If everything we do is because of desire, then yeah.
Okay, what have you desired that's made you happy for a long time?
Desiring to serve God makes me happy.
Wow, that's interesting. I wasn't expecting anyone to pop that one in, but...
Well, that's usually when I get back to that, I'm instantly happy.
For a long time.
Well, until I forget everything.
Oh, interesting. Okay. But outside of the God stuff, anything, any desires you had that make you happy for a long time?
Not forever.
Ah, but a long time.
No, usually you get points of happiness.
Points or moments?
Yes.
Okay, and that's what you settle for, huh?
Oh, well, it's just like sometimes when you just like a flash of brilliance and then it disappears.
It's flickering.
Yeah, it's like you see something and then it goes away again.
Flickering. Flickering happiness, remember that. Anyone else? Happiness, you've had a desire that's brought you happiness for a long time. Did you ever stumble upon such things? In the ordinary sphere of activity. Don't mention any God stuff yet.
No.
No spooky stuff.
No, not really. No. Doesn't last that long, about 5 minutes. A little bit longer.
Could you say to Matt that you've done material things for me that make me happy for a long time?
No.
That's an honest analysis. Could you say that? No. I guess everyone's wondering now, what are you guys doing together?
How do you find that my desires have a reaction back, like chocolate? So eat a lot of chocolate and then get a big spot.
Really? Is that what happens to you in chocolate?
I call it in moderation, desires not to be back, and maybe just have Easter egg once a year. And let's see, maybe just the right, well, Hare Krishna likes the no chocolate on. And we say no, we have certain rules on, but congratulations.
The Hare Krishna, they say no chocolate. Why is that?
It's a bit of a dark area of chocolate, because
I'm not really sure if you can get intoxicated on chocolate.
Have you tried it?
No, I haven't.
Why do you think the Hare Krishnas would have a taboo about chocolate? What would you say? Yeah. Why? Why do you think there'd be a taboo about chocolate? Chocolate seems an innocent thing, right? Lots of ladies, especially, I hear, like chocolate more than men, is that so? Mm-hmm. Why do ladies, why are they supposed to like chocolate? You sell it in your duty-free shop, chocolate? Exotic chocolate from the Netherlands. why, what's the thing about chocolate and ladies?
Divine, I suppose.
Oh, divine, yeah. Really? Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And it probably is a craving, so you'd say it was an ultimate desire. Mm.
Anyone else? Any other chocolate fans here? Yeah.
I don't know.
Bridget?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else remember your earlier days finding chocolate to be divine?
Yeah. Hmm? Oh, yes. I usually feel sick after I've eaten chocolate. I enjoy eating it.
Who would get it for you? Your husband?
No.
I don't know what it's doing for a bit of chocolate.
Well, as far as I know, the Hare Krishnas, they do not take chocolate because it's got caffeine in it.
No.
No. Now, it's not a question of intoxicating you so much so as it's addictive. How many of you have eaten chocolate regularly and then suddenly stopped?
Coca-Cola and like that.
Yes, Coca-Cola, but yes. I remember when I was a little kid, I used to drink a bottle of Pepsi-Cola or Coca-Cola every day, and then when you stop, you feel a craving in your stomach. Actually, early, up until the beginning of the 20th century, Coca-Cola had cocaine in it. Mm. That's where the name comes from. Mm. And then they suddenly realized, But up until around the 1920s, 1930s, Coca-Cola had cocaine in it. So anyway, chocolate's addictive because it has caffeine in it. The same thing that coffee has it. I'm sure we have at least a few coffee addicts here, yeah? Hmm? No? No coffee addicts? Interesting. No? Never?
Well, I've had a problem today, actually.
There we go.
What is it? A problem.
Caffeine? It's addictive. Caffeine?
It's addictive, certainly.
Yeah. So, therefore, the Hare Krishnas, they don't want to intake addictive substances because we're already in trouble with our main addiction in life, which is we're addicted to thinking we are the body. Lord Krishna points this out in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, the spiritual classic Bhagavad Gita. The main addiction in material life is to thinking you are the body. You're actually addicted to that unreality. I am this body, and I shall satisfy this body materially. That's an addiction. And remember, the body is a bag of desires. It's full of desires that are waiting to happen in the future. Just like when you were 8 years old, you had one kind of consciousness. Then when you became 12 or 13, your whole consciousness changed because of the desires manifesting at the right time and stage of bodily development. So there's no question of an innocent child. There's simply a question of time, when the seeds will sprout. And where do these seeds of desire come from? Do you know why? They come from your previous life. And the seeds of that life come from the life before that. So in this way, desire is pushing one life after another.
I think desire for, say, like girls, as you said, that I see it as a social thing rather than, like, for example, a person who could be, like, locked up in prison since birth would not have a desire for that because they don't see that happening around them. They don't see mothers and fathers walking around in town or little children walking around with parents. So for them to see that, after a while, after they see girls their age and stuff, they start liking it. But for a person who has never seen that before, would not have a desire like that.
Are you sure about that?
I'm pretty sure.
The hormones boil. And visions come to your mind.
But you have seen nothing else besides.
The hormones have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And you do see things.
You might desire other things, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You might desire. I just don't picture a person, say, a male, who has never seen a female before in his life.
Where is that person?
I'm just saying, if we were, say, to do a project on a person who...
Find me a man who's never seen a female in his life.
What about the twins that were brought up by the wolves? You know how often babies are brought up by animals.
Are you making a comment about the human civilization today? Are you trying to say that most people today are raised by animals?
Sorry, I said it wrong, but I don't know what I mean.
No, okay.
I understand what that gentleman's saying in a way. It's similar to if a child has been, say, brought up by a wolf, mm-hmm. you know, its mother has been a wolf, then if it's never seen another human being, does it still have the same desires as what we do as human beings who live in communities? You know, it's an interesting...
Instincts are there. Because the hormones in the body will change.
Right.
And anyway, let's not take exotic cases like that, you know.
Okay.
You know, talking about men who've never seen a woman before in their life. Is that you? You've seen lots of them.
No, I didn't.
Hmm?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, just nothing that sort of I feel to be not even not up to standard. Just I could be equal to, rather than like a female that would understand, rather than just to be a female. You know, because you can find a female like anywhere, pretty much in this world, but you cannot find someone who's on the same level as you.
The dream woman.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ah, yeah. Miss Wright, the dream. That's a desire, yes?
That was a desire.
Mm-hmm. She'll understand you completely, right?
Mm-hmm. But is it a desire? Because it is my desire. Mm-hmm. But is it achievable? Because it's not up to me, really. Unless I change my view.
Well, you're getting into what's called the law of karma. It's like everyone might desire a Mercedes, but not everyone has the money to pay for it. So then you might have to get a Hyundai or something. Not bad. Hyundai's supposed to be good cars these days. Yeah. So, you may desire, but you have to have the wherewithal to pay for your desire. You have to have the ability to pay for your desire. Everyone may desire to be Prime Minister of New Zealand, but you may not have the good karma, or bad karma, from your past life to get the position. So instead of being Prime Minister of New Zealand, you get to be like the head of your parents' group at the local school or something like that. You know? Yeah.
Do we have control over our lives then? Or are we just living out our past lives, say, sevens or
Both. You're living out your past karma and simultaneously you're piling up karma for the future. So every moment you're a victim of your past and you are freely shaping your future. Simultaneously. What?
I'm not, just, it seems like a person who would be preoccupied with outliving the other person's bad karma would not have the time to collect good karma from his next one.
It happens simultaneously. You are receiving happiness and distress in your life based on your past karma, your past life. Mm. At the same time, you're doing things, you're acting in a way that will affect your future. So things are acting upon you because of your past life. Meanwhile, you are acting and piling up reactions for your next life. Mm-hmm. You understand? Okay, we could say, because of your good karma in your past life, mm-hmm. instead of continuing to live in Ukraine, you came to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. But living is easy.
Yeah.
Then?
What makes a person who has a good karma in a past life have a bad karma collect up for the next?
Because you could be spending all your good karma capital.
Okay.
And it runs out.
Yeah. I understand. I just don't see why you'd be doing that.
Why you'd be
doing that, spending your good karma?
You're burning it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're receiving all the reactions from your good karma.
Do you have a link with your next life, like such as memories of your past, rather than just accidents that will happen to you in your next life?
Some people can remember parts of their past life. It's not important. Why? Just look in the mirror and you'll see that bag of desires, and then you'll know that you did certain things in your past life. Because you have a body in this life. And that body is a bag of desires.
Right.
Now let's continue with that point about desires making you happy. Anyone on this side of the room, we asked, anyone on this side of the room who's had desires that made them happy for a long time when they were fulfilled?
No, right. I'm very happy.
For a long time. Not just a weekend or a week. A long time.
Yes, I have. Yes, I could say I have had a desire for a long time. Do you want me to tell you?
No, let me.
It made me happy, yes.
But, and the happiness lasted month after month, like.
Ultimately, it did make me happier, yeah. And
then what happened?
I'm still happy. Yeah.
Month after month after month, you're still like.
It's part of my life now, but yes, it was the best. Definitely the best thing for me to do, and that I am a better person for it.
So what was that?
A happier person for it. Not a better person, a happier person.
Well, what is that?
What was it? Mm. It was ending a relationship. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did hold the partner hit the road, Jack?
No, it was destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So I was much happier when I got out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite common. Okay, now, I don't want to denigrate the value of getting rid of a destructive partner. I don't want to belittle that. But let me give you an example just so you might look at this thing in a different way. Suppose I spent 10 years straight banging my head against this wall. And then suddenly I stopped banging my head against the wall. What would you think what do you think I would feel?
Extreme pain.
Pain?
Well, I was already feeling that pain when I was banging my head into the wall. When I suddenly stopped, what do you think I would feel?
A little pain.
Less pain. Very good. You get the prize tonight. Very good. We'll give you a coupon for the duty-free stuff. Every time I get an airline ticket, you know, we always have these DFS, you know, coupons. Is that where you were? I always have to kind of throw them away, like, when I go to a duty-free shop for. Yeah, but prices aren't cheaper, are they?
Yes.
Really? No, no.
A lot cheaper.
No. Everybody knows. Really?
Yes. Well, it's tobacco.
Oh, I don't care. So it's basically duty-free shops exist for tobacco, liquor, and perfumes like that.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm not interested in that stuff. No. I just know, like, their electronic items are not cheaper.
Oh, you know, they are. We'll make sure they are. Two good deals, yeah. We'll make sure they are. If you see one more expensive, I'll definitely throw you one cheaper.
She said, wait.
Anyway, travelers don't buy electronic goods in New Zealand. You know, you buy them in the States or Singapore, you know, or something. Okay. Now, getting back to the example of banging the head against the wall, you said when I would stop, I would feel less pain.
Mm.
But is that happiness, that I'm feeling less pain?
It gradually turns into happiness.
Why? Just because I stopped banging my head against the wall, why does it turn into happiness?
Mm. You have time to do something else now.
Just because I stop banging my head against the wall, why does that translate into happiness?
It doesn't.
All it is less pain. In other words, it's relief I'm feeling. Is that happiness? No, that's just the absence of pain. But that doesn't mean this is happiness, you understand? Many people make the mistake of confusing relief or less pain with happiness. You've ever been very sick before? Fever, burning, and then finally the fever breaks. Would you say you're happy? Not really. You'd say, okay, I'm in less pain now. It's like this finger. A couple of weeks ago, I had an infected finger when I was in Peru. My fingers swelled up, and oh, so much pain every second. So much pain. And so, I couldn't sleep at night. So when it stopped, I wouldn't say, oh, now I'm happy. I'd say, well, now I have less pain.
Couldn't you say that, say, if you have, like an experience like that, you sort of realize how moderately happy you are always, you just don't notice it because you don't have anything to compare it to.
Say it again now.
Like, a lot of the times, let's say if people have intimation with mortality, or
what?
Intimation with mortality? Mm-hmm. Is it like when somebody close to you dies, or you see something happening? Or it happens to you, and you realize how valuable life is, but you didn't realize it before this happened, and it was always there, but you didn't realize it.
Take the happiness for granted, say like, I'm reasonably happy that I don't have any swollen fingers, but I just take it for granted once something like that would happen, suddenly happiness is, which you didn't know actually was there, you don't see. Once it comes back, you realize that you have this. You begin to appreciate it. You begin to appreciate it more.
Once what comes back?
The norm, which was you didn't think was happiness before, and now you think is happiness.
Wait a minute. I don't know if I'm going to go by that. The norm comes back, and before you didn't think it was happiness, but now if you suffered a bit, you realize the norm was happy. I don't know if I can handle that one.
A person who goes, say, lives a normal life, he doesn't consider that to be happiness, then he's put into prison.
Mm-hmm.
After he comes out, he realizes that being out of prison is actually better, so he was taking it for granted before.
But is that happiness?
Was happiness more?
This sounds like less pain to me.
What's the difference?
Ah, very good. Very good question. That's what no one knows. They don't know the difference between less pain and happiness. That is my point. Congratulations. You got a prize tonight. This is the problem. People do not know the difference between less pain and happiness. This is how low the standard has sunk. So once again, remember, I'm banging my head against the wall for 20 years and suddenly I stop. What I'm feeling is less pain. What I'm feeling is material relief. But that is not the same thing as happiness. When I'm burning with a fever, and then the fever goes down, that doesn't mean I'm happy, it just means I'm suffering less. Of course, when I was a little kid, I used to like to have fevers because I didn't have to go to school. And my mother would feed me ice cream. Yeah, to bring down the fever.
Oh.
Yeah. I would just lay in bed all day and no school, and she would just feed me ice cream. I thought it was great. That's an example of how you're suffering, but you think, oh, this is pleasurable. I thought, this is great, a burning hot body, a burning hot tongue with cold ice cream on the hot tongue, on the hot fever's tongue. That was a great experience. Your tongue is hot. You ever had such a high fever that your tongue is hot? Anyone had fever like that? No?
Yeah.
And then the cold ice cream hits that sizzling hot tongue. Wow. I used to think it was great. Is that happiness?
Sounds like real prison.
Hmm?
It sounds like real prison.
Real?
Prison.
Presence?
Yes.
What do you mean?
Well, if you were thinking of something else, you wouldn't notice the ice cream going on your tongue. It would feel like there, you were there to enjoy it.
So you think that's great? Feverish tongue with cold ice cream on it. That's a light, huh?
Yes. It just sounds like experiencing
my senses.
Yeah.
Which any animal can do. Yeah. Okay?
Yeah, but can they have that sort of sense of observation of it?
Sure.
How do you know?
Yeah, have you ever watched animals?
Yeah, but I haven't. Well, I don't remember being one.
But you can go to the zoo and study. Watch the chimps. Watch the orangutan.
Mm. I'm not them. So I don't know.
Huh?
I don't really know.
You can look and see. You can deduce. It's a fair deduction.
But when I look at nature and animals and like the mountains, there's I think they're quite a good example in a way, because they just are, and they don't, like, we're always judging ourselves.
They just are, meaning they are trying to fulfill their instincts.
Not trying. Yeah, they're not trying, they just are.
No, they're trying, they're struggling.
Not when I look at them. That leaf is not struggling.
Yes, that leaf. It's struggling for water outside. You can see how trees move towards the sunlight. That's part of struggle.
Depends what you call it, I think.
That's a struggle. Your life is a struggle.
Sometimes it is.
Not all the time.
No, not all the time.
Why not?
It's not.
Well, you gotta feed yourself.
Yeah, but sometimes it just happens naturally and it's no struggle.
The food just falls into your mouth.
Well, you know, you get it with your hand, but there's no...
And is it the food you want?
I don't know, it's just the food I'm eating.
But the point is, you have to do things with your life. You have to struggle studying, right?
Mm-hmm. But when I,
Shopping is a struggle?
Sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't.
No, you just don't see it that way. Just like I thought having a feverish hot tongue with ice cream on was not a struggle.
I thought it was a pleasure.
Yeah, I was a fool thinking it was a pleasure, you know? Anybody else would understand, you know, you don't want a fever. You want to get healthy.
But what's wrong with having a fever?
Because it's you know, it's a sick disease condition of the body.
But that's just a judgment on it.
No, it's an unwanted condition for the body. It's not healthy.
You have to say, oh, I want a fever, and...
That's just desire.
But we've already discussed how desire is everything. Have you ever gone to church and prayed, oh God, give me a fever?
No. It doesn't mean it has to be a struggle when you have one.
Yeah, it's a struggle. The body is struggling. The, what do you call it, the white blood corpuscles are fighting the red, what is it, the red blood? I forgot what my biology is.
No,
that's
good, I
don't
know.
Huh?
Not enough, actually.
One color blood cells are fighting the other blood cells.
The white blood cells are antidepressants.
Anyway, there's a battle going on. That's why you have a fever. There's a battle going on. It's a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
You're struggling in school?
Yes.
Yeah, but you're struggling to find meaning in your life? You're struggling trying to figure out what you're doing in this world?
Yes.
That's a struggle.
Yes.
When you go shopping, you're struggling. You go to the hairdresser, you call them hairdressers, or what do you call them?
Yes, hairdressers.
Isn't that a struggle?
Sometimes. Some way to say. Getting around things.
Right, it's a struggle. You're struggling, you're concerned how others see you. Most of the other students at Victoria University are having lots of parties and living a wild life and you're not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So don't you wonder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm just too good. You know, they probably tell you, you know, good girls don't have any fun. They tell you that?
No.
I mean, you're really good. They won't say it to you directly. They probably whispered behind your back. She thinks she's really good. She doesn't have any fun. Oh, yes. Yeah. And the guys, what do the guys say?
The guy.
Yeah.
Which one?
Whatever. Yeah, at the university, what do they say?
About...
About you.
Oh. I don't know. We usually just talk about food.
Definitely the guys are interested in more than physics. They're struggling. They're struggling with the physics. They're struggling thinking, how long do they have to talk to you about physics before you realize they're not simply interested in physics? It's a struggle. Wait, let's stay on this. They're struggling.
Yeah.
They're probably thinking, when is she going to, what is this? I mean, is she really that naive? I mean, get real. Does she really think that all we want to do is talk to you about physics? I mean, how long do we have to go through this? They're struggling. You with me, right? He agrees. That's our sound of agreement.
A lot of the guys that in the physics department are actually bodybuilding. Change, you know.
And why are they doing that?
That's it. Because they want to be strong. Not a very good atmosphere.
They call it sculpting, right? Sculpting their bodies.
Yeah.
Why do they do that? Because they want to be attractive. And you're supposed to notice.
I think they're scared of girls.
Anyway, my point is you are struggling.
Oh, I'm struggling more.
Yeah. Okay. And you are struggling with desire. And you're struggling with other people's desires.
Yes.
All right.
Most of the time.
Yes. Almost all the time.
A large chunk of the time.
Almost all the time. All right. Now, what would be the most intelligent thing to do about our desires? In Krishna consciousness, we understand that Krishna is the source of all desires. Therefore, if you, as a tiny part of Krishna, learn how to satisfy Krishna's desires, automatically you're satisfied because you're part of Krishna. Krishna is the perfect desire. That is the deepest and most comprehensive understanding of the Supreme. That the Supreme is the perfection of desire. When we try to live our life in ignorance of Krishna, then we suffer from inappropriate desires, illicit desires, frustrating desires. Krishna consciousness means to learn how to desire perfectly. There's no question of you ever being free from desire. What your goal is, what your goal should be, is to become free of inferior desire and to become full of the superior desires. That is the Krishna conscious lifestyle, the perfection of desire. Once you see yourself as part of the Supreme Whole, then naturally you want to act in a proper relationship with the complete whole. Then your desires are perfectly harmonious and you're satisfied in a long-term way. Otherwise, by cutting yourself off from Krishna, by separating the part from the complete whole, all you get is this kind of illusory, imaginary, flickering happiness in the matrix of illusion. If we're going to solve the mystery of desire, we have to look to the source of everything. Therefore, Krishna, in the text Bhagavad Gita, presents himself as the source of all desire, the perfection of desire. Once we understand the Supreme, once we understand God as the Supreme Desire, then things start to clear up for us. The Supreme has unlimited desires as well as the unlimited means to satisfy those desires. That is Krishna. Completely self-sufficient. We are tiny. We're not the complete whole. We're tiny, tiny parts of Krishna. Our natural capacity is to please Krishna. Then we give up the futile struggle of trying to be independent lords. So once you think of the supreme source of everything in terms of pleasure and desire, things start to become clear. You start to understand why you have desire. You have desire because you're part of the Supreme. The Supreme has desire. So don't sell yourself short. Don't sell your life short and become enamored, become bewildered by flickering happiness. Don't settle for such cheap things. Go higher. So many times people are indeed superficially satisfied by flickering desires. They're actually not satisfied deeply, but it's just all superficial on the surface. And that superficial happiness doesn't penetrate to the core of your life, nor does it last a long time. It's actually a disturbance. How many of you would actually think that flickering happiness is a disturbance? Yeah, it just torments you. It's here, it's gone, it's here, it's gone, it's here, it's gone. And you wonder, is it actually here? And while you're wondering, is it actually here? It's gone.
Of course, some of them leave with damage to recover from.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a light switch there? Carlos, can you work that light switch? Flicker it back and forth. This is flickering happiness. It's a nuisance, isn't it? Go on, keep going, quick. Now just see the so-called happiness in your life in that way. It's actually an agitation, it's a disturbance. What are you thinking when he's doing that? Go on, do it again. Quick. What are you thinking when he's doing that?
It's annoying.
It's annoying, okay. Basically, what you're thinking is, hey, either leave it on or turn it off, right? Similarly, you should think the same way about flickering happiness. You can't leave it on. Material happiness is not going to stay. But you can turn it off. So Krishna consciousness means to turn off the flickering happiness and instead become absorbed in the permanent happiness on the spiritual platform, on the Krishna conscious platform.
Isn't it just changing our belief? Is it like giving up on search for material everlasting happiness and just adopting spiritual happiness, which is not anything anymore?
What is spiritual happiness?
Pure happiness.
What is that?
Well, the happiness that doesn't go away. It's a pure kind of happiness.
The only way you'll find out what is spiritual happiness, what is pure happiness, is if you tune in to the supreme source of everything. Krishna means the reservoir of all pleasure, the unlimited source of all pleasure. If you know how to tune in to Krishna, then that is the pure happiness. You cannot describe pure happiness separate from Krishna, separate from the source of everything. Not possible.
It's a different kind of happiness,
isn't it? Yeah, it's just a different kind of happiness. Just like you cannot separate the sun's light energy from the sun. That's why you say sunshine. Similarly, you cannot separate pleasure from Krishna. Being Krishna conscious means being aware of Krishna's pleasure. And because we are part of Krishna, automatically we'll be taken care of. That's what you're all missing. You're missing Krishna's pleasure. We think of God, if we do it all, as the creator, the maintainer, or the destroyer. But how many of us think of the Supreme Lord as the most perfect enjoyer? The source of unlimited happiness and pleasure, which you can't get on your own, struggling as an independent agent in this world. So the fire of desire can either drag you down or elevate you. It all depends on what you are desiring. If you want to desire the highest things, the transcendental things, the pure spiritual things, you require training in how to desire the highest things. If you don't care and you just want the lower things, the flickering happiness, this world, the matrix of illusion, will present you ample opportunity for continuing to be not too smart.
Is the highest of desires not selfish desire, or so it's fine?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the spiritual happiness, is that the happiness of the not selfish, or?
A selfish person considers his or her material existence as the everything. The selfish person doesn't see himself as part of the supreme whole. Most people today are trained to be selfish. They're simply concerned about the desires of their bag of desires. Alright. I think we've given you, I hope we've given you something to think about tonight. Fire desire and what is real happiness and how you shouldn't mistake the absence of distress for happiness. Any last questions?
Yeah. Does that mean that devotees, Krishna Tavari, Krishna devotees, that they don't have any material desire whatsoever?
Have you been to a hospital before?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the fact that persons are in the hospital, does that mean they're completely well?
Right.
What does it mean?
Yes, they're ill.
Mm. And they're getting treatment.
Mm.
So, those who start Krishna consciousness are ill, they're getting treatment.
Right. So, it's a process.
Yes, it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Can I ask them? You're talking about addiction and the way the Krishna consciousness begins addiction. I always thought that to have addiction is that you could fight against, and conquering your addiction would be a powerful part of character, rather than, I mean, like, there's a lot of people that give in to their, you know, parallel addictions and things like that and trying to do that. But having the power to get addicted to something and, you know, leave it would be a much more powerful power than just not trying something, just, you know, leaving it all behind. The strength rather than, you know, just accepting the challenge rather than just staying away from it.
You can't make yourself artificially into a martyr.
Why not?
Artificial means you decide everything. Better you dedicate yourself to satisfying Krishna. And then you'll see what real satisfaction is. On your own, you can't satisfy yourself. Can't be done.
No, but how about addiction? Like, the whole, there's always like an idea of a challenge, you know, and what it seems to me that when the Krishna consciousness would be explained by the addiction part of it, it's sort of just staying back, like from, say, there's a race of people who can fight their heroin addiction, and Krishna conscious people just don't even want to challenge anyone, they're just, you know, staying in the
way to
challenge.
And I think he's trying to say to avoid the challenge isn't just challenge them, it's accept the challenge. Of like,
so that passive resistance.
No. I don't know.
I mean, there's Krishna desires, and then there's like the kind of desires that would make you happy. But there's also material desires, and to just say that I don't want any material desires anymore would be just saying, like, sort of giving in almost. You're like, I have a problem with like
following, you know, like other people's, not the beliefs, other people's ideas. And I always like a challenge. And if I could challenge myself, not necessarily other people, but like, you know, today I've been doing this long, you know, tomorrow I could do better. And for me, that's a desire. And I don't see anything wrong with it.
Remember the flickering light switch.
Mm.
You should want something more substantial than the flickering happiness.
Can Krishna deliver you material eternal life? Or just Krishna life? I want material life. I want constant material happiness.
Well, you're in the wrong place. You're in the material world.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Do I accept that as a challenge?
No, you know, it's just you can't win.
I'd like to think that I can. That's what I'm saying by setting higher goals. I haven't achieved any of them, but I really want to live for
it. Even if you could achieve your goals, death will ruin it all. And that can come at any time.
But then there's reincarnation.
Yeah, but according to how you live this life, you'll be incarnated in your next life. You don't have to be a human being. Come back as a worm.
And I'll have my own struggles and I'll come to them, hopefully.
You're meant for better things than taking birth as a worm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that I would like to achieve my happiness in other people's expense. I'd like to achieve it in my own expense. It's like cheating to achieve another expense.
The best thing you can do is to find out about Krishna consciousness. Find out what is real happiness and then teach others. That's the best thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Don't sell yourself cheap, you know that expression?
Mm-hmm. I don't know sometimes.
And move away from the flickering happiness. Find out how to connect, how to reconnect your life with Krishna, and then the real happiness will flow. As long as you're in the material realm, there's no question of any satisfying, lasting material happiness. It doesn't exist.
But I'd like to reflect your faster.
You should have higher aspirations.
Isn't that a higher aspiration, having material, like, rather than adopting a Krishna consciousness?
I think he's saying that, like, there's a material world doesn't provide the pure happiness, and that's a rule. There is no pure happiness in the
Krishna
world.
Says that in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, this material world is a place of suffering.
And then he is saying, I'll take it as a challenge and make eternal happiness come to the place that cannot have eternal happiness.
Impossible.
So he wants to take it as a challenge.
No.
Well, I mean, what if it brings me happiness to strive to search for happiness in the real world?
He's a rebel.
Mm-hmm. Were you weren't here Sunday, were you?
No.
I gave a talk Sunday about the two kinds of people who can be happy in this world. One kind is the perfect transcendentalist, the perfect spiritualist. Everybody in the room said they weren't in that category. The other is the complete fool. You know, the animalistic human being who just doesn't think about anything, doesn't want to worry about anything, doesn't want to figure anything out. Just tries to satisfy his or her senses. Those kind of persons can think they're happy in this world. Everyone in between suffers because they're neither complete gross materialists nor are they perfected spiritualists. So in between they suffer.
Or they suffer for?
Hmm?
Why are they suffering?
Because they are not completely linked up to the spiritual reality.
How can we just ignore the animal bodies that we inhabit?
Don't eat them.
Hmm?
Don't eat them. Are you a meat eater?
Yes.
Okay, well.
But I mean,
not very compassionate.
Yeah, but I mean,
We live inside an animal body. And to ensure its health, we need to go right here. The supplement gives us an animal body, so we need to sort of live a healthy animal sort of.
Right now you're a human being. You should be animal. The Sanskrit word for flesh is mamsa. That's the Sanskrit word for flesh. That means you, me. The point is that for those who are determined to eat animal flesh, by hearing the word for animal flesh, mamsa, they know this is what happened to me. They're basically saying, I'm killing this animal so I can eat this animal. But in my next life, I know this animal will kill me and eat me. Every action has a reaction. We can go on all night, but I want to let everyone know that there is dinner. So maybe we better just have a break for dinner. But it's been a very splendid audience tonight. Quite impressed. Please come again. How did you find us here?
Good.
No, but how did you know about us here?
I'm friends with Carlos.
Oh, okay. So is your first time here?
Yeah, I came before one other time.
Okay. From Leslie. And your intelligence will be satisfied. Your first time?
I know, I frequently come to yoga.
Ah, I see. Okay. But you knew her?
She's from philosophy school.
Ah,
yeah. Yeah. And I
don't know. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We can talk about that. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks.
Come again.